Right, nice to see everyone. So, joy and calm, joy and tranquility, these are great qualities, even if we only have glimpses of them on a day long like this. Or maybe you had a lot, I don't know. But I want to take some time now to step back and look at the wider picture a bit. Part of what we discover on a day of practice like this is our relationship to the qualities of tranquility and joy. And that might be even more valuable to discover than whether or not we had those qualities today, discovering that relationship. So sometimes there can be an attitude of grasping around these beautiful qualities, these uplifting positive qualities. We have a sense of, I've got to get these. And once I have a little bit of them, I want to hang on. It can lead to some impatience. Is it happening yet? Where is it? And of course, we learn eventually that this kind of relationship tends to diminish experiences like calm and ease and happiness. But it's also interesting that there can be various resistances to calm and joy and happiness. I run into them a lot with people. So for example, with, you know, in terms of tranquility or calm, people want to be passionate. You know, we have things that we're passionate about, we care about deeply, maybe we see it as our cause, something like that. And tranquility may be seen as opposed to compassionate action, to seeking justice, to having proper righteous anger about the state of the world. If I'm calm, I probably don't care. So that's one possibility. Or on a more personal level, people can sometimes worry that too much tranquility will make them passive, unable to compete in the world and unable to secure a livelihood in some way. How many job descriptions say that they are seeking a calm person, compared to those that say they're seeking a dynamic, passionate person with a lot of drive, right? It's clear enough in our culture what is valued. So sometimes I point back then to the words that we heard at the beginning from Indira Gandhi. We must learn to be still in the midst of activity and to be vibrantly alive in repose. So I think the true spirit of tranquility is not really one of passivity, of indifference, but maybe one of combining an inner calm with some kind of vibrant aliveness. We have to see for ourselves how we can do that. There are even issues with joy that people have. I encounter people who think it is some kind of betrayal to be happy or peaceful or joyful in difficult situations, or to be joyful in a world with suffering. And I would say that these concerns, actually, which, you know, for the most part, these concerns are about being loyal to conventional ways of seeing things, you know. If it's suffering, I need to be upset about that. If something needs to be done, I need to be agitated about that. That's very conventional understanding. So this actually means that spiritual joy and tranquility are radical and subversive qualities to cultivate. I'll say more about being willing to embody joy in a world with pain a little later. But for now, I want to zero in a little bit on spiritual joy and and then also back out and put it in a broader context. What is this quality of joy? Sometimes also translated as rapture, or I've even heard gladness, happiness. So it's really a beautiful quality of the heart. It's a developed quality of heart. And it points toward abundance. It really points toward a kind of a feeling of abundance. So perhaps appropriately then, the Buddhist teachings talk about several different kinds of joy. We have kind of an abundance of different kinds of joy. So there's, you know, empathetic or appreciative joy in the happiness of others. That's called mudita. There's meditative joy or piti, which we focused on a bit today. And then there's joy in the path and the Dharma itself. So mudita, you know, appreciative joy or empathetic joy or altruistic joy, we could say it's one of four beautiful qualities of heart called the divine abodes or the Brahma Viharas. And the other three are often usually translated as loving kindness, compassion, and equanimity. We don't hear as much about mudita, about joy, it seems like, because the other three seem to be more popular. But they're all beautiful. They all support each other and resonate with each other. These are all relational qualities. And what appreciative joy does is that it acknowledges that we live in a world that includes happiness. It does include some happiness. We observe others receiving things that they wanted to get, that they like, gaining praise, achieving goals. So there are, you know, we can see this out in the world. It does happen. And one quality of a mature heart is the ability to celebrate happiness and success in others. The Dalai Lama said, "If I am happy when good things happen to other people, billions more chances to be happy." So I guess these days we're up to over 8 billion chances to be happy. Mudita is a wonderful quality. It's worth cultivating. It's easy to feel in relation to animals. Like if we see a kitten joyfully bounding around in tall grass, it's just, you know, it's just joyful to watch animals sometimes. And we can practice. You know, we can practice having it for people too. Some people it's easy, of course, but not all. And, you know, we can bring in phrases like, "May your happiness continue," if we see that, or if we're tuning into that sense of mudita. But we can acknowledge also that we have resistances, you know, resistances to even the beautiful qualities of heart. And the main one for mudita is envy or jealousy, a sense that they're not deserving of that, or I should have had that, or how come I don't have more of that? It's kind of natural that we would feel that when we're attached to certain aspects of ourselves. And then this is a chance, if we practice mudita, if we try to point toward this kind of joy, it's a chance to purify this sense of lack that we seem to carry. And sometimes it feeds into a sense of self-criticism. You know, I didn't get that because I didn't deserve it. I don't deserve things like that. So cultivating joy through meditation, like we did today, can support greater openness with other people's success. They come from the same root, let's say. And then we can just incline the mind toward this sense of mudita and abundance with the success of others. May your happiness continue. One reason to focus specifically on mudita, this relational quality of celebrating the success of others, is that it reduces our usual self-focus and also our underlying belief that we can only be happy when we get something, when we have pleasure. How much more expansive things can be when we can open to just the general level of happiness that there is sometimes in the world. And then the second kind of joy is what we explored today, meditative joy, or piti, P-I-T-I. So I won't say so much here, but just to give us the bigger picture now that we've had some practice with it, this kind of joy arises as the mind becomes secluded from, you know, seeking more conventional kinds of pleasure and also from the hindrances in the mind, wanting and not wanting, energetic imbalances or doubt. But we can acknowledge that sometimes we don't find a lot of joy in sitting. Sometimes there's pain in the body, or our attitude might be that we're sitting down to practice like it's an obligation or a chore, plugging away at being with the breath or bringing the mind back. And there can be kind of a heavy or plodding feeling about our meditation. Where's the joy in that? So sometimes it can be helpful just to have someone like me point out, a teacher point out, that there is meditative joy. There can be a lightness and engagement that's joyful, so that we remember wholehearted engagement with life is called joyful mind. So one accessible way into meditative joy is to notice how good it feels to be present, to be mindful and aware. I've pointed to this a few times today, but one way to tune into this, if it wasn't prominent for you today, is that the moment that we wake up from wandering, which, you know, we'll do many times a day if we have a mindfulness practice, is that we'll have that moment where we come back and mindful again. At that moment, right when the mind comes back, it's nice to take a moment to feel the pleasure of presence. You know, that's the time to bring it to mind, because it's very clear at that moment. We were just lost, and then we sort of gather the mind in. It clarifies. We have mindfulness. Right there, we can feel the pleasure, the joy of being present. So even if what we're waking up into is an unpleasant experience, we come back and there's knee pain, the mindfulness itself does have this slightly joyful quality that's accessible in that moment. So it gives your mind positive feedback that being aware is a good thing, and it helps the mind to want to stay in the present moment, and also makes it easier to come back the next time we get lost. And it's also fine to deliberately feel and appreciate any nice feelings of relaxation and ease that we get in the body during meditation, or peace in the mind. We can then kind of amplify these into deeper meditative joy. Sometimes we've been trained in very dry mindfulness, where we're told that mindfulness is always just being neutrally with whatever is happening. And that is one way to practice mindfulness. That's kind of the spirit of it in some sense. But mindfulness of breathing as a specific practice that we did today, if you read the instructions in the suttas, in the discourses of the Buddha, he does actually say to bring to mind, to call up, to lean into, to use modern language, to lean into any feelings of relaxation or ease that we have in the body and the mind, to make those part of the meditation. So we don't have to just be neutral. It's actually okay to emphasize or suffuse ourselves with that kind of joy when it comes. It's perfectly fine. The Buddha himself said this kind of pleasure is not to be feared. So I don't know if we fear pleasure or not, but we don't need to. And so when the, you know, when the mind gains some degree of calmness while still being alert, it can begin to feel quite happy. Full balanced meditative joy actually leads into tranquility. That was our context today, is this resonance between joy and tranquility. I hope you might be inspired or interested to continue practicing with that in your regular home practice. And I also want to say a bit about a third kind of joy, which is joy in the practice or the path or the Dhamma itself, which is great. This kind of joy, when we start to tap into it as our practice starts to become more just the momentum of our life, it's very nourishing. And it comes from a variety of conditions. What is it that supports this kind of broad, just joy to have a practice? One of them is actually ethical behavior. So sometimes the word ethics or virtue can be a little bit heavy in our context, our cultural context, just somehow because of our conditioning, what we may have grown up with or how we may have engaged with that when we were learning ethics from authority figures. So we may have some negative associations with that word, but it might be interesting to know that in Dharma practice, ethics are one of the prime causes of happiness, the prime conditions for the mind to feel content, blameless, joyful. I think maybe the word blameless is always a little dangerous. That's what the suttas actually say, because then it brings up people's sense of blame. But, you know, we're meant to feel that when we're engaged with care in some way, that it was okay. You know, it's okay. Our intention is good. We're doing our best. Even when we make mistakes, we'll still engage with that in a way that's ethical, that owns up to whatever happened. So we can just feel an ease about our way of being when we're intending toward non-harming, when we're living a life of non-harming as best we can. So I hope that your engagement with virtue will be one of positive engagement and a sense of respect for yourself. So that's one condition that supports joy and having a practice. But this joy can also come just from faith or confidence in the path. You know, trusting, seeing that what we've done so far has made things better, has improved things in some way, has helped us to see more or to feel more connected to other people. To discover things about herself. Excuse me. So there's a way in which our trust, our faith, can also feed into a sense of ease or joy. And then I'll put in one more, which is that joy can actually come from letting go of our conventional concerns for getting things and having things, for being identified with the pursuit of wealth or prestige or identity in some way. You know, the word for this in Pali is renunciate, or sorry, in English would be renunciation. In Pali, it's nikama. So I mentioned that last, after letting go of conventional concerns, but that's really the essence of this kind of mysterious sometimes quality called renunciation, is that we let go of getting caught up in wanting and getting and having and being a certain way. When we let those things go and we settle into things that we care about more, our value of non-harming, our value of being mindful, our value of having a caring presence in the world, the mind gets very clear. So the Buddha described joy that arises from seeing things clearly as they are, you know, with a heart of being willing to let go. So he links this actually to the understanding of impermanence. When, by knowing the impermanence, change, fading away, and cessation of various sense objects, one sees as it actually is with proper wisdom that these objects, both formerly and now, are impermanent, are unsatisfactory, and are subject to change. And when we understand that, joy arises. Such joy as this is called joy based on renunciation, based on letting go. So somehow our wisdom about seeing that things change, they come and go, and what's solid through that, if you will, is our knowing of it, our wisdom, our understanding. There's a kind of joy that comes from that. So many conditions support having a sense of just joyful engagement with the path, and whichever one feels, whichever of them feel meaningful to you at this moment, the ethics, the faith, the trust, the wisdom, the letting go. Great. Tap into those. Allow them to nourish your heart. There are so many distractions from the path in everyday life that tapping into our genuine enjoyment of having a practice can be very supportive. But what about, what about when our experience includes pain or anger, sadness, anxiety, loneliness, envy, depression? It's not that life is always joy. It's not that we're always remembering these other things. Sometimes there is real pain going on. So then it's still possible to notice that the part that's aware of that isn't in the pain, isn't angry, isn't sad. So we also have this knowing quality of being with something. We can put energy into the awareness. That is wholesome. Even if what we're experiencing is some kind of a gripping in the mind or an identification or something painful. The teacher, Winnie Nazarko, was once teaching the three-month retreat at IMS, and she looked out into, I think it was pretty far into the retreat, and we've been there a long time. And she asked the group, how many of you would say that you are experiencing mostly wholesome mind states? There was 80 or 90 people in the room, and probably only a few raised their hand, maybe 10 or less than 10, that they were experiencing mostly wholesome states of mind. And then she gently reminded the group that mindfulness is wholesome, actually. Awareness, this knowing, that is wholesome. And if we have that, then if what we're knowing is anger or fear or anxiety, the mind is still wholesome through the knowing of that. And as we've said before, this is even somewhat pleasant or at least neutral. So we can always put our energy into that awareness, into the knowing. And strengthening that knowing will helps us not to be as overwhelmed by what can come up, what very real emotions can come up through our life and through practice. So let's go back to this idea that we sometimes carry, that it might be some kind of betrayal to be happy or peaceful or joyful in difficult situations or in this world. One thing that is pointed to in the Buddhist teachings is an unconditional happiness that does not depend on things being a particular way. This is part of freedom, actually. And we can look for that in our heart, maybe practicing for the time when it's completely natural, but for now we can look for it. Is there a way that, is there some aspect of our heart that doesn't depend on things being my way or being a particular way? Jack Kornfield says it like this: in joy, we are not afraid of pleasure. We do not mistakenly believe it is disloyal to the suffering of the world to honor the happiness we have been given. So as we keep practicing, we will be given a kind of happiness that is unconditioned, that is not dependent on things being a particular way. It can be strange how I feel kind of happy right now. And we can honor that. Are we honoring the happiness that we've been given, whatever measure? Also, from Archbishop Desmond Tutu, he said, "It helps no one if you sacrifice your joy because others are suffering. We people who care must be attractive, must be filled with joy, so that others recognize that caring, that helping, and being generous are not a burden. They are a joy." How about that? So Archbishop Tutu did not have the easiest life, but he was very, very joyful. And he says very clearly, we people who care must be filled with joy so that others recognize that caring and helping and being generous are not a burden. They are a joy. A friend of mine spent some time in South Africa a couple of decades ago. She was volunteering at an art gallery there. And there was some kind of a special exhibit, and the archbishop came to the opening, and she was standing about 6 feet from him. And she remembers that her main impression was he lit up the room. He was made of pure joy. So we can recall from Dogen, to pour all your life energy into your everyday work is called joyful mind. So how do we get there? Maybe the most basic confusion we have about joy and tranquility is that there are things that we have to get or acquire. We can cultivate and develop them, and I went through some ways to do that. There's always ways we can incline our mind or try to bring them to the fore. But the secret is that the source for both spiritual joy and tranquility is letting go. Letting go of agitation, letting go of getting caught up in conventional pleasures so that we can feel the deeper and more subtle pleasure of the heart. Ayakema says, there's nothing to achieve. There's only letting go. As we let go more and more of ego identifications, desires, and support systems, bliss will arise. So calm and peace and appropriate joy are the way out. We can look for them in our life. We can deepen them on the cushion, and we can let go into them. So may all beings taste solitude and peace and Dharma joy. So these are my thoughts on joy and tranquility for today. And I wanted to leave some space, time together to have any additional questions or reflections that you might want to share. And the recording is still on, if that makes a difference, but please do feel free to raise your Zoom hand in the reactions tab. Hope you'll be inspired to maybe share some of your wisdom. Did you learn anything interesting today? Or if you have any questions. Yeah, Evie.
So I've been thinking about this a lot, actually, for the last couple of weeks, because I was at a week-long retreat and then came back into normal life. And it really hit me that one of the biggest things that interferes with my joy of my work is the feeling of like, uh-oh, I'm going to mess up, right? So the antidote in a way is confidence, and not like, oh, I can really, it's not like a clingy kind of confidence, but just more, just sort of quiet, like, you know, I can do this. And I just wonder whether, and when I saw that, like, it really did click for me. And I just wonder whether you have any thoughts about the relationship between confidence and joy.
Definitely, they're related. Yeah. You know, coming from a place of, oh no, I might mess up, or a place of being kind of inherently flawed in some way, which is so common in our culture, it really can get in the way of the lightness that we need to tap into spiritual joy. So it's helpful to kind of think of our, you know, if we can't just let that go, but we can at least tap into maybe a sense of, I'm already okay, you know, and I have a practice. So at the very least, I have that to fall back on if in case anything does go wrong, just in case I'm not perfect. But, you know, I'm already okay. And that can be a very beautiful and helpful thought to bring in. And yeah, I love that you've seen that connection. Have you found it to have you found ways to work with it in your work in the last week since the retreat ended?
Yeah. I mean, actually to sit. I mean, I have this strong, you know, this sort of major booster shot of a really sort of deep calmness and the joy of that. And so I've been reasonably successful this week in plugging back into that by just a little bit of sitting, but then I forget.
Of
like
course,
I just
yeah.
get caught up because of all the yeah. stuff I have to do in my life. Right. And so even if it's not work, it's something else. And I forget about the power of sitting basically. And even just like 10 or 15 minutes, if I can get to that place, I emerge and I'm like, oh, I like my work. Like that's why I chose this job and
right.
sort of try again. So, yeah. So really mostly just the boring answer of sitting and.
Yeah. Well, you know. One thing that I would point to in your experience is that you have a reference point that you've cultivated, of course, through your many years of practice, but also through going on retreat for a time you get a concentrated period, and we can use that as a way of kind of resetting the reference point, and maybe the reference, and then we forget, but we still have this reference point. And over time, you can have some faith that the reference point starts to sink down deeper into that. And so we have access. It's a slow process, and we might need to refresh it by going on retreat again, or even a day long like this is great. But just having some trust that our reference point is there for us. I like that Sharon Salzberg's, the subtitle of her book on faith is called Trusting Your Own Deepest Experience. So, you know, being willing to embody that reference point as often as we can just strengthens it. Thank you. Yeah, Debbie.
I have no questions. I just want to thank you for this beautiful day that you obviously spent a lot of time on, and it works. So thank you.
Well, wonderful. It's nice to see you, and yeah. I can see from your face that it does work.
Yeah, thank you.
Good. Thank you. Sumreen.
Yeah, thank you so much. It was extraordinary. I feel very, very light. And I think what really started to affect me early on was when you said the unhooking. Mm-hmm. And then just right now, the letting go. I don't know why, but for some reason, letting go became the phrase became like a bad phrase for me, because it seemed like I was still taking back control, like I'm letting go. And it was very active and almost like shoving something off the cliff. And I've been listening to a lot of Zen podcasts, and this one particular group did not like the term letting go. So I don't know. But right now it's affecting me positively, you know, and because that's what makes sense to me. I don't know. I'm at a loss for words, but what I'm feeling right now, and it's really important, and for me personally, is I'm just gripping less, and mm-hmm. I can't even explain to you how freeing that is, like as a survivor of like immense trauma, to just feel it on a deeper level. And even in the group earlier, you know, living with chronic pain, physical, emotional, psychological. I understood today that how tranquil I have been able to become in the pain. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I got underneath that today, or I saw that I don't need to be in that agitation, or there's something beyond that. So thank you so much for saying unhooking, because apparently that started the cascade for everything. Thank you.
Great. Well, yeah, it's wonderful the way sometimes just a new word. Yeah, I can understand that letting go is not always the best word. Sometimes we say letting be, you know, just let it be, let it be there and unhook from it. So yeah, that can help also. And yeah, we want to, what you shared is very beautiful. So thank you. Diane.
I just also want to express my gratitude. Today is my birthday. I can't think of a better way to spend one's birthday. And even though I was behind that slide that closed the road in Soquel, I was shut in and I had no water, I felt joy. And I attribute that to the beauty of the practice and the gift of your teaching. So I just want to say thank you. And again, highly recommend a day long on the birthday is a beautiful way to love your life and lean into the gratitude of what's working rather than get caught up in the stories of what may not. So thank you very, very much.
Beautiful. Thank you. Is there anything else that needs to be said in order to feel complete? Well, let me express also my deep gratitude for all of our practice today. It was really inspiring to see all the faces on Zoom and to sense the dedication and the faith that you were bringing. I could really feel that even through the computer screen, and just to see all of us together doing this and really just tapping into the joy and presence and power of the Dharma. That's what can flow down through the centuries from the Buddha here all the way through to all of us. And it's our ongoing practice that keeps that energy alive in the world for the benefit of all. So thank you. Thank you for your practice. And we can also dedicate the merit of our practice today to the benefit of others. I think it's very difficult to practice only for ourselves. We may do it on our own sometimes on the cushion, but really this is a practice that changes our entire way of being, and that is reflected in our connections with other people and other beings of all kinds. So we can bring a little bit of intentionality to that by just wishing, may the other beings that we come in contact with as we finish this day of practice together, may they benefit from, in some way, from what we've done, maybe just in our attitude, just in our simplicity, our connection with them. Maybe we'll be a bit kinder, a bit wiser. And we have no idea how that will ripple out farther into the universe. It spreads out to so many people and beings that we can't see, and often even through channels that we can't see. So the best we can do is just open our heart and wish, may all beings be happy, may all beings be peaceful, and may all beings everywhere find freedom. Thank you.